I'm John Krall. The Peace Corps began as one of President John F. Kennedy's most noble aspirations, a program that would send idealistic young Americans around the world as emissaries for understanding. Through 50 tumultuous years, the Peace Corps has endured, sending generations of Americans to places all over the globe. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the Peace Corps legacy and impact with our guests, Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley, and two Peace Corps veterans from Indiana, Brad Ratajk and Jill Curry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, as well as your host. We are talking today about the Peace Corps, its legacy and impact. We're fortunate to have as our guest Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley. Kevin, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, John. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Peace Corps veteran Brad Ratajk. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
And joining us by phone is another Peace Corps veteran, Jill Curry. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thanks.
Well, and I probably should say, is in the interest of fully disclosing to our audience, that Brad and Jill actually are brother and sister, so everybody knows. I'd like to start here just sort of in a basic sense. Peace Corps is one of those things that everybody's heard of. But if you ask them beyond what it's supposed to do, you know, something beyond that sort of basic naming level, what is the mission of the Peace Corps? What is it that you set out to do? Kevin Quigley.
Yeah. John, the Peace Corps' mission today, 50 years after it was started, is the same as it was. It's to help through bonds of friendship and working together to help create a more peaceful and prosperous world. And it has three big goals. And I'm simplifying them. One, help others help themselves. Two, help them understand our country better. And three, for those 200,000 of us who've been privileged to have this Peace Corps volunteer experience, to bring that story and that experience back home and share it with our fellow Americans.
And you are a Peace Corps veteran yourself.
I am. So. I was very lucky to serve in Thailand between 1976 and 79.
Okay. And did that... Could you talk a little bit about that experience? Obviously, it had some impact on your life.
Sure. Delighted to. I think for me, like many of the other volunteers, Brad and Jill, who we'll be hearing from, it changed my life. My life would have been very different. I live very close to the Lao border after U.S. engagement in Southeast Asia had ended, but fighting in that part of the world went on for many years to come. Mm-hmm. I got deeply immersed into Thai language and culture, and I think developed a set of relationships with people there who seemed initially very different from me, until at this point my heart has a home in Thailand, as it does here in the United States.
How often have you been back?
Probably been back to Thailand about 25 times over the last 40 years.
Oh, boy. So it did make a profound impression on you. We are talking about the Peace Corps here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Brad Ratajk, could you talk a little bit about what your Peace Corps experience was like? And first, let me take a step back from that. How did you get interested in the Peace Corps?
Well, I knew very little about the Peace Corps as a student at Franklin College, and one of the trustees one day suggested that I look into it. He said, you know, a guy like you has a chance to do something that matters, and I didn't really know what that meant at the time, so I looked into it and requested the application and talked to a few people who had done it, and I thought, wow, I've never been anywhere. I'd never been west of the Mississippi or outside of the United States or Canada. So the opportunity to do that appealed to me. And again, going back to what he said, doing something that mattered. So I served in Central Asia in 2004 and 2005 in Uzbekistan, which is directly north of Afghanistan, a real vacation destination, as my friends like to call it. I was an organizational development volunteer, so I worked with nonprofits there. And I worked with an organization where students came to learn English. I wasn't an English teacher per se, although I think anyone who served in the Peace Corps will tell you that if you're a native English speaker, you're going to end up spending a significant portion of your time teaching English. I worked with college-age students at this organization to try to help them learn how to develop programs and sustainable practices, strategic planning, as we would call it in the United States, but really we just tried to keep the electricity on the following week sometimes. So it was a surreal experience. That's, I think, the best way to describe it. Life-changing, of course, but every day. It was never normal to wake up in Uzbekistan, and I think anyone who's ever been there would tell you that's probably the same. But
well, what when you talk about the things that you did and the way it changed your life, in to give people some concrete idea of what this experience is like, how did you come back different? I mean, what qualities did it draw forth in you that you didn't suspect that you had?
Well, I think Peace Corps for anyone is a PhD program in problem solving. You, by showing up as the American in so many of these places, people automatically look to you as, oh, this guy's got it figured out. He's no matter what problem it is, and believe me, I was asked some pretty unique questions. Don't see walls anymore. Whenever there's in professionally speaking, personally speaking, when a challenge is presented to you because of the experience that I had there, figure out a way to get around it, go climb over the wall, get underneath it, knock it over. You learn self-reliance in a big way, and you learn that a lot of things that you thought were important aren't as important, and obviously material things, but I mean, there's just a sense that not as much bothers me as it did then. And, of course, those who have lived with me would make jokes about that as I'm not as neat. So because you get immune to certain luxuries like, vacuumed carpets and things like that. So.
Okay. And Jill Curry, what was your experience like?
Well, my experience, I served in the Peace Corps from 2003 to 2005 in Paraguay, South America. I went as a beekeeping volunteer. So taught beekeeping as well as agriculture. I lived in a very rural area about 8 hours outside the capital city. It was definitely a logistical difficulty doing my job as a Peace Corps volunteer with the travel difficulties. I like to say that it was a test in patience sometimes to wait 3 hours for a bus and to travel out. So I had a very different experience than Brad.
And in what ways did it change you? Obviously, it sounds like it forced you to develop more patience, but...
Yeah, I think for a lot of the things that Brad said, it taught me to not care so much about neatness and cleanliness, even though every night, I would scrub my feet and check them for bugs. Definitely, and I guess, the relationships were the key part for me. So coming back to the United States, it taught me that importance of everyday relationships and those conversations, and that part of the Peace Corps work was really important to me.
And what was it that drew you to wanting to do the Peace Corps?
Well, in college, I had traveled quite a bit, and I also studied Spanish. So really, for me, the language aspect was what drew me to the Peace Corps. However, when I got to Paraguay, I found out that Guarani was the second language, an indigenous language that they spoke, and I ended up speaking Guarani for most of my 2 years.
How difficult was that for you to learn?
It was difficult. My first year in site, we go and you train for 3 months as a volunteer when you arrive in country. So I learned Guarani for 3 months, and then I was thrown out for my 2 years of service. And the first year was very difficult. A lot of times sitting and listening to conversations. But then I got it. Second year, I was very fluent. I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
We are talking about the Peace Corps here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, obviously, you say 200,000 people have been through and had this experience, Kevin Quigley. And what I'd like to talk a little bit about is, while the basic mission is the same, how has the Peace Corps changed over time? I mean, half century is a significant slice of this country's history.
There are some really significant changes and a great deal of commonality. What Peace Corps does is pretty much the same, John. Focus around big human development challenges, education, health, about food, about developing economic opportunities. How that's done is quite different. I think both, as Brad and Jill have just described, a lot of their work is about helping others build the capacity to do those things. Whereas in the early days of Peace Corps in the 60s or 70s, a lot of the volunteers then were doing those things, like I was a classroom teacher, others were digging wells. Now it's a lot more about helping other people learn how to fish, or even in some cases, developing the fishing industry instead of fishing with them or doing the fish and then giving that to them. So that's a big difference. And I just wanted to add one other comment to what both Brad and Jill said about how Peace Corps changes the volunteers. And what I hear time and time again is it changes their attitude, changes their worldview. It makes them feel, we talk about it as being as at home in the world, that that you understand you're connected to something much larger than yourself. And that's really important for our country, for the individuals who participate, because so much of our country, 20% of our economic activity, comes out directly of these connections with the rest of the world. So that's a great learning for us.
And when you say of the 200,000, I mean, how do people get involved in the Peace Corps? Can you walk through what that process is like real quickly, and how many people apply, how many people are chosen?
The process is pretty simple. If somebody is interested in the Peace Corps, and I can say it's one of the best things that you'll ever do in your life, and I can guarantee it will change your life, go to peacecorps.gov. The application material is there online. The process is a little time-consuming and sometimes opaque. It takes about a year, because not only does Peace Corps have to match your skills and backgrounds and interests with the opportunities, they then run a medical and a security check. And there are about three applicants for every position. Currently, there are a little more than 9,000 volunteers serving in 75 countries. So each year, Peace Corps takes about 4,500 volunteers.
And do they get compensation, or are any of the costs covered for doing this?
All the costs are covered, John. And it's compensation is a good way of describing it. It's not a salary, but you have a monthly living allowance. The goal of that is roughly you will be compensated comparable to the people you're working with. And then Peace Corps also puts aside a modest amount of money, $250 or $275 a month, to help on the readjustment process at the end of your 2 years.
Oh, so when you get back, you've got a little reentry fee, as
that's right. So, and you can use for tuition or a down payment on a car or a couple of months' rent or to travel.
Or something like that. And where in the world do Peace Corps volunteers go? Maybe it's easier for me to say, are there places you won't send them because of
that's right.
security
well, I
questions?
Said it's 75 countries, so Peace Corps is in every region of the world, in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, in the Pacific, Latin America, in the Caribbean, where it doesn't go if it's unsafe. And that's the principal concern, to make sure volunteers are wanted, they have skills that can make a difference, but then determining can they be kept safe. So, for example, Peace Corps isn't in Iraq and won't be anytime soon, isn't in Afghanistan, won't be soon. And there are some countries who've developed determined that this kind of engagement with our country is not something they need at this point in time. So Brazil, India are in that category.
We are talking about the Peace Corps here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. As I said, we're talking about the Peace Corps. We're fortunate to have as our guests Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley, Peace Corps veterans Brad Retike and Jill Curry. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today about the Peace Corps. We're fortunate to have as our guests Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley and Peace Corps veterans and Indiana residents Brad Retike and Jill Curry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Your question, please.
I have more of a comment. I have a daughter who is in the Peace Corps as we speak in her second year in Nicaragua. And my wife and I were able to visit her last year. And, I mean, it's been a life-changing for her, and it was life-changing for us to experience that.
In what ways was it life-changing for you?
Well, to experience day-to-day the simple problems of survival, of just, you know, where's the water come from? She's living in a home that has no water, no electricity. She's a guest in a home and has her own room. He mentioned the carpeting. This is cement floor.
that may be the image that sticks with this program here. Brad Retike delivered it. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Jim.
That's okay. But it's been life-changing. Number one, when the young people mentioned becoming more self-sufficient and travel, gathering food, storing food, keeping food, no refrigeration, bathing in a river and not staying in too long because of the amoebas and that type of thing, privacy, that type of thing. So it's she, I believe, has had a wonderful time and is actually a little kind of torn about leaving, has been invited by the family to stay another 6 months. So can she stay? So she'll be home in August. But for us, it's a wonderful opportunity for her. I believe she learned things she could have never learned in the university, and she had a degree in international agriculture, but still had to kind of start all over because Nicaragua is very hot, very dry. The river dries up.
Yeah.
Bugs, animals, you know, to help establish gardens. But she has been able to build five brick ovens. Well, she's been able to help them and teach them how to build ovens as opposed to stoves. And in fact, I think a couple of days ago for her birthday, she made herself a red velvet cake. And we're just thinking that's impossible. You can't do that. But, you know, she solved the problem and she made it for her family and her guests. So.
Well, and before I let you go, I want to ask, because you bring a different perspective to this that we don't actually have on our panel right now, and that is the parents' perspective. Did you have any qualms about saying, I'm going to send your child into this situation?
Yes, but it was, you know, we knew it was coming. We were very supportive, and when the phone call came, for various reasons, it was just, you know, a few weeks notice in her particular case, which was not normal, and not the standard procedure. And it's like, you know, you've wanted to do this, we'll help you pack. And and we stay in touch. Hmm. You know, I will say a difference today is that the cell phone helps immensely. Yeah. She calls us three or four times a week, even way out. I mean, it's a 5-mile walk from the highway out to where she lives. And she's still able to get cell phone service. And that's made all the difference in the world. And I think that has really helped. And we were concerned. She's cautious. We've, you know, read a lot about visiting. We've read a lot about Nicaragua. And then we visited. We felt this family and the community where she was, they absolutely adore her. And they had promised her, they said, nothing will happen to you here. We will protect you. And it's a very safe area where she is. But she's traveled by bus all over Nicaragua and has just become more savvy and just become very wise, I think, for our 26-year-old. And so we're looking forward to having her home, but we'd kind of like to visit once more, but I don't think that'll happen. But so I can speak for my wife and myself, it was a great program. She happens to be the great kind of kid that would work out, you know, flexible, adventurous, and it might not work for everyone, I think, which is why the screening process is so thorough. Mm-hmm. But she's coming to the close of her second year and just has really loved it. And
great. Well, thank you very much for sharing your story with us, Jim.
Well, thank you for the show.
Certainly. Thank you. Take care. Well, and Brad Ratajk and Jill Curry, I'd like to talk a little bit about Jim's daughter, you know, talked about, Jim was talking about the fact that it's going to be difficult for her to leave, that there's that sense of separation. Was it difficult at the end of your period? Was it a struggle to leave? Did you want to continue to stay? Jill, how about you? Did you want to continue the experience?
I was ready to come home for some reasons, missing my family. I do want to say that Jim and his wife being able to go is so important for their daughter to be able to share her experience with their parents, because I was able to do that with our parents, and that was so critical for me to still today be able to talk to them about Paraguay. But yeah, it was difficult to leave because of the relationships, and I miss my host family there. I miss just the adventure and the challenges even. But I was happy to come home to running water, to a computer, to my friends, who to speaking English even, and really having people understand you and your background a lot better. Because my community understood me, but they didn't understand every aspect of me. And as much as I could build friendships there, you know, there were still a little pieces missing because, so I did miss my family and my friends here and obviously the luxuries we have. I missed carpeting as well. I bought carpet squares, two of them, for my home because I just, you know, I wore flip-flops every day of my life there, and the only time I did not have shoes on my feet was when I was in bed or standing on my two carpet strips because So I did miss a lot of the luxuries.
Your brother is laughing at you right now. I just thought I'd let you know that.
Laughing with.
All right.
Okay. So, and certainly when my parents went to visit, they experienced some of those same hardships. Yeah. But I do miss it. I am going back this year for the first time. There was, after my service, I had two volunteers follow me up in my site. Mm-hmm. So until recently, there's actually been a volunteer in my house that I built while I was there. So now that they are all gone, I'm going to be hopefully going back this year.
And how long will you stay?
I will just stay for a couple weeks, as long as I can get off work here in the States.
Okay. Yeah. Kevin Quigley.
John, I just wanted to pick up on a couple of the really great points that Jim made and Jill touched on. The fact that Jim and his wife were able to share this with their daughter in Nicaragua is just fabulous, and it's a great way for Peace Corps volunteers to fulfill one of their goals of sharing their experience with others. But in particular, Jim's comment about the safety and security issue I thought was so important because, face it, we live in a dangerous world. We know a lot of parents worry about sending their children overseas. But he said that what I often hear is that the community was going to keep his daughter safe. Mm-hmm. And that's different from any other way that Americans go internationally, whether or not they go to study, whether or not they go to travel as a tourist or they go on business. Peace Corps volunteers are integrated into a community. They live with the community members. As Jill talked about, they eat the same food, they learn to speak their same language, and the community protects them because there's a relationship there. That's different.
Brad Ratajk.
And one thing that Kevin just mentioned is a component of that security is learning the language. Mm-hmm. Peace Corps language training is second to none. Mm-hmm. I didn't speak a word of Uzbek, as I think it's no surprise to anyone. When I went, and within 3 months before I was sent out to my site, I was pretty fluent. I could navigate where I needed to go. I could order food. I could pay for things. I could, you know, transport myself around. But the more, the better you learn the language, people, A, start to trust you more, and then you're more aware of your surroundings. And again, then you get more integrated into the community, and it's just a better experience overall. Some people didn't. They thought, well, you know, I'll just get by on a little bit of language. But those people, I don't think had near the experience that those of us who really immersed ourselves did.
We've gotten a question from a listener who says, to some degree, I think, Kevin, you addressed this earlier, but to give a firm answer, does the Peace Corps offer funds for college for volunteers? Listener named Ike.
Yeah. Thanks for that question, but unfortunately, no. But they offer something every bit as good. 99% of the volunteers have a college degree. But there are almost 300 programs that combine graduate study with Peace Corps service, and they provide accelerated terms of study and some tuition benefits. So it's just a great, great combination.
We are talking about the Peace Corps here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you could shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how are you?
Doing well. Your question, please.
I have several questions for Kevin. By the way, welcome to Indianapolis. I hope you like
the weather
here.
I brought it along.
Oh, did you? Well, I hope you're going to stay for a while.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I have several questions.
Sure.
I was in the Peace Corps in the 70s in Tunisia,
uh-huh.
North Africa.
Uh-huh.
And more recently, 20 years ago, in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
So I have a couple of questions that are more policy things. One thing was the idea of 10,000 volunteers. It used to be that that was the goal, and that always seemed slightly backwards to me. That sounds like top-down rather than the number of volunteers being determined by requests from host countries. I'd like you to address that. Would you want me to give you my two or three points here?
Yeah, very quickly, if you could, and then we'll take them off the air.
Okay, so 10,000 volunteers, top-down idea. How important is that? Has that been no longer an issue or whatever? Another one, is there a local return Peace Corps group? We used to have one here quite active about 20 years ago, and then people got accepted to graduate school, moved away, got married, and to my knowledge, we don't have any RPCV, Return Peace Corps group around town. That would be one question. Another issue after I got back from both of my tours was Peace Corps service does not count in terms of, I guess, federal benefits, retirement, and stuff like that, where it does for military personnel. So if you could address that also.
Great. Certainly.
So 10,000 volunteers,
yep.
Local Peace Corps group, and preferential federal hiring. I think that was a benefit.
Great. Thank you very much for the call,
Jim. One other thing. I want to back up what Kevin said about changes over the years. When I was in Tunisia in the late 70s, I was teaching welding.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they would probably be teaching engineers rather than sort of a higher up the educational food chain. In other words, in all those years, countries have developed their own cadre of skilled tradespeople, whereas now they might be sending volunteers like at the next level up of education. So if you could address those, I'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much for the call.
Great show. Yeah. Great
Thank
show.
Thank you.
Jim.
Well, we'll start with Kevin Quigley. Great. I think Brad Ratajk actually can answer the question about the returning local group.
Jim, first, thanks for your service. On the question of the 10,000 as a goal, that's been a goal of really every president since the first President Bush. You make a great point about it should be bottom-up, not top-down, but there are some 20 countries out there that would like to have Peace Corps, that Peace Corps thinks would be good Peace Corps countries. So for which we do not have adequate resources. So the number of 10,000 is really about getting the resources to respond to the demand that's out there about countries asking for the Peace Corps. But I agree completely. It shouldn't be top down. It shouldn't just be bigger for the sake of being bigger. We ran a campaign a couple of years ago about being better and bolder, and we're really focused on trying to make Peace Corps better and bolder and not just focus on the numbers. on the Peace Corps service. Actually, Peace Corps service does count towards federal retirement. It counts in terms of your years of federal service. And one of the best benefits of Peace Corps is when you returned, you have a status that's called non-competitive eligibility. It's not comparable to veteran status, but it's better than no status at all. And my group, the Peace Corps Association and the Peace Corps leadership and has begun conversations with the Congress about changing that status to recognize that Peace Corps volunteers do serve their country, and that should be recognized in the federal hiring practice. And I think Brad was going to...
Brad, yeah, the local group?
Yeah, there's the Central Indiana Peace Corps Association gets together on a monthly or bi-monthly basis for usually dinner at a unique restaurant around town. And April 2nd at 6:30 at the Bosphorus Cafe here in Indianapolis is the next event. So Central Indiana Peace Corps Association, if you do an online search for that, you can
find it. Mm-hmm. You can find, is there a contact number or somebody who serves as the go-to person there?
Yeah, I don't have that with me, but if they'd email the show, we could...
We'll get it to you. We'll get it to you and get it back to them.
You can also get it on our website, peacecorpsconnect.org, and then go to the group section, and the Central Indiana one will show up there as well with a contact and a website.
Well, we had a question from a listener who did not want to go online, wanted to know if there was an upper age limit for Peace Corps volunteers. If you've retired, is it possible for you to do Peace Corps?
There's no upper age limit, and currently the oldest serving volunteer is 84, and I think the oldest ever was 86 when they began their Peace Corps service. So if you're young in spirit, you've got something to contribute, I'd say check it out.
And you mentioned a second ago that you ran a campaign a couple of years ago. We probably ought to talk about the funding question. I ought to give you an opportunity to do a plug for the organization. Yeah. Where does the funding for the Peace Corps come from, and why is there a Peace Corps and a Peace Corps Association?
Yeah, the funding for the Peace Corps comes from all of your listeners, John, and others across the country. It's taxpayer funded through an annual appropriation process. Peace Corps, relative to many other agencies, has done quite well in this tough financial times. Going back to Jim's earlier question, we had a commitment from both Senator McCain and then Senator Obama in the last presidential election cycle for them to increase the Peace Corps budget by 50% to go from then $340 million to about $550 million.
And then the economy tanked.
The economy tanked, and we did get as high as $400 million, and then in the last 2 years there have been reductions, relatively modest. This year it's at $375 million. And the Peace Corps Association, part of what we do is work with our community to talk to the Congress about why the Peace Corps matters. We've got members of this 200,000 plus a community of individuals who've served their country through the Peace Corps in every congressional district. The association encourages them to talk to their legislators about the Peace Corps. And this is something the government agency can't do. They can't ask the Congress for more money unless the president says it's okay. And this year, the president has asked for the same amount of money next year as for this year, and we think that's not good enough, so we're talking to members of Congress. And we encourage your listeners who are interested to check out our website at peacecorpsconnect.org and look at the advocacy section there.
We are talking about the Peace Corps today here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. We're fortunate to have as our guests Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley, Peace Corps veterans and Indiana residents, also brother and sister Brad Ratajczak and Jill Curry. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the Peace Corps. We're fortunate to have as our guests Peace Corps President Peace Corps Association President, I'm sorry, I skipped that, Peace Corps Association President Kevin Quigley, and Peace Corps Veterans Indiana residents Brad Retike and Jill Curry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I've gotten an email question from a listener named Sherry. Says, hello, my daughter is planning to join AmeriCorps. How do the two differ from each other, other than the fact that AmeriCorps volunteers are stationed in the United States? Smiles, Sherry. Kevin Quigley, we'll toss that one to you.
Sherry, thanks for that great question. And you're absolutely right. AmeriCorps volunteers serve their country by serving in communities at home. Peace Corps does that by serving internationally. What you might not know is there's a lot of overlap between the two. Many individuals have either an AmeriCorps experience or then a Peace Corps experience, and they that sets them off on a life path of a life of service, and they look to enhance whatever they're to complement their experience that they've had at home with an international experience or vice versa. Now, AmeriCorps is a more recent program. It was started under President Clinton in 1994, but it has a lot more alums than Peace Corps, which was started 30 years earlier. And AmeriCorps has about 750,000 alums. I think another difference, and this goes back to John's earlier question about the Peace Corps and its funding, Peace Corps at this point in its history is very fortunate in that it has bipartisan support. And that's not the case for AmeriCorps because that program is still closely identified with President Clinton. So AmeriCorps funding seems to be a much larger challenge, particularly in this environment. And that's an area where we try and work with the AmeriCorps alums to help them to ensure that AmeriCorps participants have a chance to serve their country through AmeriCorps, because we believe anything that gets Americans serving in communities at home abroad is a good thing. It helps the individuals, it helps those communities, and it certainly strengthens our country.
Are there some economies of scale that could be achieved by having the two groups linked or more closely than they are?
Well, there were some periods of time where they were linked. Under President Nixon, the two programs were linked and under one agency. It wasn't AmeriCorps because it didn't exist, but it was the VISTA program, which is a key program under AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps also includes other programs like Teach for AmeriCorps, Senior Corps, Head Start. There may be some economies of scales, but their missions and the focal point is quite different. And I think if anybody suggested that the two entities be merged, I'd probably have 200,000 angry emails and calls saying they would be concerned that this would affect the independence of the Peace Corps.
And dilute the impact of the experience
and
all of that. I should ask, we had a question kind of dealt with whether there are upper age limits, and realized we haven't talked about what you look for in a Peace Corps volunteer. Where do we start? Where do we start with that? What, Kevin Quigley or Brad Retike, either one of you?
Well, the group of 50 people that I went over to Uzbekistan with was the most diverse group of people I've ever been with in my entire life. There was, I think I was 22 at the time. We had someone as young as 21 up to someone as old as 72. There were five people over 65. From all places all across America, literally diverse as in every sense of the word. So as far as what you look for, I think they look for people who are flexible. I think they look for people who are willing to do about anything that's asked of them. Mm-hmm. I think they look for people who are problem solvers. Sure, obviously you learn a lot about that. And I think they look for people who have backgrounds of involvement, whether that's in the community or, for me, it was largely in college with different organizations.
Well, I guess that's where I'm going in terms of
intelligence,
drive, those sorts of things.
Well, I think in addition to what Brad has said about attitudes, and I think he's got a great list of flexible, willingness to do anything, problem solvers, there are some experiences that they look for and are good predictors of successful volunteers.
Okay.
and Brad just mentioned one of them, people who volunteered before. Mm-hmm. That's the best predictor of a successful Peace Corps volunteer. Those with some kind of international experience, perhaps with a church group on mission, a study abroad, a semester abroad experience, those are also great predictors. The third is some knowledge or exposure of foreign language. But what often happens, as Jill described earlier in our show, was she was quite good at Spanish when she went to Paraguay, mm-hmm. but she needed to learn another language. But I think because Jill had already studied another language, it was easier for her to learn Guarani than it would have been otherwise.
We are talking about the Peace Corps here on No Limits. Anita, welcome to the program.
Hi.
And I probably should do, in the interest of full disclosure, the fact that you are Brad and Jill's mother.
Right.
And the only comment I've gotten in preparation for this is that you want to offer an opinion. So
well,
this would be your platform, I guess.
Okay. The other parent that called in, I found that, and having both Brad and Jill overseas at the same time, as a parent sitting back here in Midwest, you really look at the world news totally different. It really gets you out of your zone when all your family's here, but all of a sudden when they're in the far reaches of the world, you pay attention a lot to world news, and it makes you get a little different perspective and on that. And that really was surprising to me, because I paid a lot of more attention to that. And communicating with them was also a challenge for us. I know with Brad, he didn't have like a cell phone at the time. He did have, because he was in a more urban area, he had access to like an internet cafe, so we could email him frequently. But the phone numbers that we got sometimes for contacting him, I never know what random Uzbek citizen I would get on the phone. So it was a little harder talking that. But now Jill had a cell phone that we could, once in a while, if the weather was right, we could get through, and she could send some small text messages home. So it was just really different to be able to communicate with them, and you just had to kind of do what you could do. But it was really interesting having them both gone and opposite ends of the world at the same time.
And you mentioned that the part I find fascinating is, obviously, I can see how it would be a transformational experience for Brad and Jill, and they've both spoken mm-hmm. eloquently about that. What you're saying is it really has an impact beyond that. It changes the families that these volunteers come from.
Yeah, I think it did, because it was all, you know, we were spread out, and all of a sudden it was just, they had totally different interests, jobs that they were doing. It wasn't just your basic college graduate or getting out, getting a job. Boy, they were just really being challenged themselves, and watching them change, even while they were there, as we talked to them, or we were able to visit Jill. We weren't able to visit Brad, but it was just having these two of your children come home and watching the changes in their perspective, in their attitudes about people, and it was really a growing experience for them. And to watch that as a parent was really interesting.
Well, and I'd like to, before I let you go, I asked them before how they had changed when they came back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talked a little bit about it, but as someone who knew them both very well before they left, and then saw them, obviously, when they came back. From your perspective, how had they changed, each changed when they came back?
Both of them, certainly the patience is the aspect, the consideration that they had for other people. Brad being in a country that certainly had a lot of political upheaval and things that he'd been exposed to a little bit more, he thought more about things, and it just really could approach things in this life just in a different manner, that was beyond knowing that there was this world perspective, that there was this perspective outside of himself. And Jill also, who went and lived very, very rural area and lived in this community, and just had to she was the American, and be the strong one there sometimes, and be the decision maker sometimes, or the help the solve their problems. It was just really amazing to see the growth that they both had. And when they came home, it was really quite a life-changing experience for both of them as they went on to get jobs then here in this country and here in Indiana, just to take them on to life.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Anita. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed hearing your story. Kevin Quigley.
Yeah, just before, Anita, you sign off, I wanted to say you're obviously doing something right. I had the good fortune of meeting Jill and Brad earlier this week at Franklin College, and I know your second son is also serving his country. So thank you for that.
And I should point out that you will be speaking tonight down on the Franklin College campus at Brannigan Room at 7 p.m., and public is invited to attend your presentation. Jill, I'd like to pick up a little bit on that said. If I recall correctly, when we talked before we went mm-hmm. on the air, when I first called you, you're a parent yourself now, right?
I am not yet.
No. Oh, you are not? Then I am mistaken. I apologize.
Oh, no.
Well, she's a parent of several beehives, though.
Several beehives. Well, that's good to know. That is good to know.
Yes.
Well, Betsy, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hello?
Betsy?
Yes. Oh,
hi.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
We're getting close
Hello,
on
Kevin.
Time, so if we get to your question.
My husband and I were volunteers in Group 13 to the Philippines in 65 to 67, so it's been quite a while ago. And I just wanted to comment that we have continued to be affected by the experience in that we tend to reuse rather than replace items in our house, mm-hmm. and that minor problems that occur when you're raising kids and have dogs and things do not loom large compared to what we experienced in our Peace Corps. So I think the whole thing, and I think our children were affected also, by the fact that we had served in the Philippines and were responsible for ourselves and our own health and all the things that happened in the two-year period.
Kevin Quigley.
Yeah, Betsy, you make a great point about how the impact of Peace Corps lingers on well past the 2 years that you served, in your case, in the Philippines. And last fall, a group of us did a survey, and we had a little more than 11,000 respondents to the survey, and we found out some remarkable things about how that effect lingers. And in one way is that Peace Corps alums, Peace Corps veterans, volunteer in their home communities at twice the national average. So we know from the census that 25% of Americans volunteer at least 4 hours a week. In our Peace Corps community, that's 52% of us volunteer. So this is just a great evidence that the Peace Corps service, like AmeriCorps service, does lead to a lifetime of service.
Well, and I'd like to ask, I think the place where I was going with springing off of Anita's comments and that about the impact, I was going to ask if we had any parents here, why they would recommend that their children do it. I think I can develop that question. It is, can you make an argument, why should someone volunteer for the Peace Corps? Jill, I'm going to start with you on this one.
It's definitely the personal development. I know that every day I wake up, you know, I do think about that bigger perspective of, you know, what am I doing, and I'm more intentional about how I live my life. And the impacts I had in Paraguay, I built 38 brick ovens that women cook on three times a day in my community. It helps them. The beekeeping, the other source of income that some of my beekeepers have, there's a lot of impacts, both personally and in the community.
Brad Rutte.
You can make the case for personal growth, the case for testing yourself, personal fulfillment. I mean, you'll have bad days in the Peace Corps. You'll have bad weeks. I mean, and I said to the group the other night, you'll have bad months. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know, or at the beginning of the day, you know there's a sense of purpose, a goal, whether you accomplish that goal or not. There's a reason for you to be there. And if you're not able to find that in your daily life today.
For some reason, as we have been talking in the show, I've been thinking of what I thought was a very moving paragraph in Shelby Foote's History of the Civil War, where he talked about the impact that that experience had on veterans of the Civil War, said that for many of them, it shrank the country. It showed them that they belonged to a country rather than to a specific place. To some degree, the parallel here would be that it shrinks the world and brings it in. The other thing is, it said, it removed the doubt that they would do anything important in their lives, that they knew at that point going forward that they had done something important. Kevin Quigley.
Yeah, I think that both those things about shrinking the world to make you feel that you're a part of it, and the feeling that you can make a contribution, you have made a contribution, and for many of us, that becomes the confidence booster, the skill provider that lets you make all kinds of other contributions. And in that survey I mentioned a moment ago, John, that we asked the question of whether or not you would recommend the Peace Corps to a family or a friend, and 98% of our respondents said that they would. And I can't think of any program, any institution, where 90% of the American people would recommend to somebody else, do this.
In about 5 seconds, Kevin, I'm going to give you the last word here, in part because it has been an inspirational program. If people are interested in getting involved with the Peace Corps and volunteering, where should they go?
Take a look at peacecorps.gov, and also take a look at our website, peacecorpsconnect.org, because that connects you with a community who've been there, who are thinking about going there, and there'd be a great resource for you and a model.
We have been talking about the Peace Corps today here on No Limits. We have been fortunate to be joined by our guests, Kevin Quigley, Brad Ratike, and Jill Curry. I am John Krall. We'll talk with you again soon. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsip. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.